Next question goes back to the applicant. Eversource has hired Asplund to delimb trees that might fall on the current electric lines along public rights of way. 2 weeks ago in Franconia, on the planned route of Northern Pass, Asplund did an unprecedented thing, actually cutting down large full-grown trees in town where burial will be, not just lopping limbs. Why is Northern Pass already proceeding as if they have the permit?
So Asplund is one of the contractors we use to execute our vegetation management program. As you probably aware, you know, trees cause the majority of our outages today, so it's really important that we have appropriate clearances. You know, Asplund, we have essentially a program that trims every circuit on a four-year cycle, and that's the, we call it maintenance trimming. That's the, where we may take off a limb or a portion of a limb. If a tree is considered a hazard tree, it's dying or it's dead or it is an imminent threat to our circuit, those are identified for possible removal. We generally consult with the property owner, the municipality, about removing hazard trees. I don't know the specifics around this particular tree, but it may well have been a hazard tree identified for removal. I think we removed approximately 15,000 hazard trees in 2015 across the state of New Hampshire. None of it related to Northern Pass.
So is your answer that you don't know why this particular, these ones in Franconia?
I don't know why. And it sounded like it was a single tree.
They were not hazard trees. They were just my neighbors. Okay.
The next question is, for the proposed COAS loop upgrade, what sections of the loop do you plan to upgrade? How tall will the towers be? What types of towers will be used? What capacity will the line have? How many towers will be there? And given the comments on aesthetic impacts, why have no visual impact studies been done for the COAS loop upgrade?
So we are early in the design phase around the COAS loop upgrade. You know, the scope of that upgrade is going to be determined by a couple of things. One, ISO New England, the independent system operator, we hope to learn from them where the actual constraints that are limiting the capacity of that loop. For those of you who are not familiar with the COAS loop upgrade, it's the existing transmission circuits that feed the North Country. And one of the things we intend to do is upgrade at least a portion of that loop where it will run parallel to Northern Pass. So it's an existing transmission infrastructure, existing right-of-way. Northern Pass will share that corridor with the existing loop. We're going to take the opportunity to increase the capacity in that loop, really to unlock small-scale renewable generation in the North Country. You know, we certainly know that where those lines are running parallel, we'll be replacing the conductor, which means essentially putting a new cable that has greater carrying capacity. There may well be some other upgrades in that loop to fully unlock it, and that's where we need the input from the system operator to assist.
So I guess the question is, are you able to answer that question about how tall will the towers be and things like that?
We've got some preliminary thoughts and preliminary designs, but it is subject to the final scope. And Sam, maybe you can provide some of the details.
Right, so the loop itself starts in Whitefield, goes whichever way you go, but if you go north, it goes up to Lost Nations, across to Paris, into Berlin, and then south in a giant circle, basically, back to Whitefield.
Those all being substations, okay?
Oh, sorry, yes. we will be upgrading the section of the line that starts just to the west of Paris substation, down through Lost Nation, down to the Whitefield substation. So approximately half of the circle will be upgraded. Structure heights will be somewhere between 70 and 120 feet in that region.
Have you done any visual impact studies yet for that upgrade? That was the last part of that question.
Yeah, my expert here is telling me no, we did not.
Thank you. Next question is, Mr. Iacopino has stated in previous meetings that those of us who believe the SEC should not have the right to preempt local zoning should work through the legislature, which has given the SEC this right of preemption. Representative Susan Emerson is sponsoring a constitutional amendment supporting community rights to local self-government. It's been designated as CACR 14, and that would deny state and federal preemption of local zoning. What is the position of Northern Pass on this constitutional amendment?
I'm not familiar with the amendment, so I'm not in a position to state our position.
Okay. Mr. Quinlan, next question. Mr. Quinlan has stated that there were several reasons why Northern Pass decided to bury the line through the White Mountain National Forest and surrounding towns. Sugar Hill, Easton, and Plymouth adopted rights-based ordinances which deny federal and state preemption of local zoning. Were these ordinances and the litigation they would have necessitated factors in Northern Pass's decision to bury the line through those towns?
No. The decision to bury the line in those regions was really based upon feedback we had gotten across the state from a wide variety of stakeholders about the importance of those scenic impacts and views.
Mr. Quinlan, you have mentioned the environmental impacts of burying along the existing right-of-way. Why would you speak of this when you know the deeds for the existing right-of-way do not permit burial?
I think I spoke about it in response to a question around cost, and I know there had been some confusion historically about the incremental cost of burial. Those incremental costs that were shared several years ago were based upon burial in the existing right-of-way, in contrast to the incremental costs that we're talking about today, which are along the public highway.
Next question is about the route and burial as well. Given Northern Pass's concern for the scenic and environmental integrity of the White Mountain National Forest in Easton, Lincoln, and North Woodstock, are you considering burying the existing 115 kV line from the Sugar Hill substation to North Woodstock and returning that right away to the White Mountain National Forest and other landowners? Burial has proposed protects White Mountain National Forest from this Eversource project while leaving it open for future abuse by another, perhaps similar project. This would be an appropriate mitigation to offer for the damages of burial. The question in there is, are you considering burying the existing 115 kV line from Sugar Hill substation to North Woodstock and returning the right-of-way to the White Mountain National Forest and other landowners?
No, that's not our current plan.
Next question goes to historic resources. Do we have other questions regarding historic resources? Just one? Okay, I'm just going to ask this one then because that will take care of this set of questions. When did Northern Pass begin working with the Department of Energy and New Hampshire Department of Historic Resources on the programmatic agreement?
To introduce yourself, Sherilyn?
Yes, of course. What's Ethan? I'm Sherilyn Waddell with Waddell Preservation Services. The Department of Energy first began working with Northern Pass on the programmatic agreement within the last 2 years. Normally, you would include it in a draft environmental impact statement, and the programmatic agreement now has been drafted. It has been shared with Department of Heritage Historical Resources and Northern Pass and is about to be presented to the consulting parties next week in a meeting, I believe, which is on Tuesday. So it has taken the Department of Energy considerable time to move forward on that programmatic agreement, but I believe it is on track, and we are looking forward to its prompt and complete completion. Thank you.
You should stay up here because I've got several more historical resource questions. At a December 1, 2014 meeting between DHR and Northern Pass, Edna Feiner from DHR stated that ongoing PSNH work along a right-of-way that is to be shared by the Northern Pass Transmission Project appears to be impacting potential phase two archaeological sites identified by Northern Pass subcontractors. In particular, she said that cellar holes and potential Native American sites appear to be compromised by ongoing PSNH activities. Dick Bovaer of NHDHR stated that Northern Pass, quote, Northern Pass was not demonstrating stewardship of the potential resources, close quote, and that, quote, because of this potential disturbance, NHDHR could find it challenging to assess the value of the sites and potential impacts to these sites by the Northern Pass project, close quote. Where is this right-of-way located, and have the landowners and towns been notified of this potential violation? That's the first question, based on that premise. Then the second question is, was the New Hampshire Commission on Native American Affairs, which is a Section 106 consulting party, notified of this potential violation?
The location of archaeological resources is always protected by federal law. So wherever the location was would not be disclosed to the public or even the adjacent property owners during those consultations. And the second question?
Is, was the New Hampshire Commission on Native American Affairs, which is a Section 106 consulting party, notified of this potential violation?
The Department of Energy is responsible for any consultation with Native American groups as nation-to-nation consultation occurs. So I am not familiar with whether the Department of Energy has intervened in this particular situation. The Division of Historical Resources may well know that.
Next question regarding historic resources is at an October 14th, 2014 meeting between Northern Pass and NHDR. Resources staff Victoria Bunker, working as an archaeological consultant for Northern Pass, stated, quote, Northern Pass requires consultants stay only on the right-of-way. Property owner permission is not attempted, close quote. Why was property owner permission not attempted, especially given that earlier consultants had been turned off of private properties when they were found digging test pits on the right-of-way? Since right-of-way easements allow only the, quote, right to erect, repair, maintain, rebuild, operate, and patrol electric transmission lines, close quote, how does the Northern Pass plan to justify submitting to the SEC data collected by contractors who entered and dug test pits on private property without landowner permission?
I'm going to refer this question to my colleague, Lee.
Lee Carbonell with Normando Associates. Yes, we work with the archaeologists for Northern Pass, and in so much as archaeological research is required for the permitting process, and Eversource has the right-of-way, then that kind of activity is part of the permitting process. It's a required portion of the project. Access to the right-of-way for contractors is part of the project. So in some cases, private property owners came out and requested that the archaeologists not enter their property. At this point, the archaeologists packed up their stuff and left those properties when asked, as we all have done throughout this project. So at some point, it's possible that we may have to go back and try and complete that phase 1B work, which is the test pitting work, in those locations, and the project will direct us at that time.
Okay, the other part of that question was, how does Northern Pass plan to justify submitting the data collected by those contractors who dug the pits on private property without permission? I just raised that because the next question goes into that too, so if you want to finish.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I guess that may be a legal question I can't answer. It's part and parcel of the required permit application process. So we have to any information that is collected needs to be submitted to the Division of Historical Resources.
Okay, so the next question is actually for the SEC. It says, does the SEC assess whether data submitted by Northern Pass was collected legally, or do they accept it on faith? The SEC will examine all of the evidence in the case and determine what weight to give to it. I can't speak for any individual committee member, but it is possible that if a committee member is convinced that something was done wrong, the committee member might not place any weight on particular evidence. That's the way that evidence is considered in courts of law. It's the same way that the site evaluation committee would depend upon the circumstances and the evidence that is presented to them.
Okay. Could I just add that the area of potential effect where the work is done is something that was determined through consultations with the Division of Historical Resources, which is a state agency.
Okay. I'm gonna come, there's a question here that's not really about historic resources, so while we have historic resources, I'm gonna ask these other two questions and then get to that one. According to NHDHR standards, quote, although artifacts recovered in Phase 1A are generally anticipated to be relatively limited, they are to undergo proper cleaning, cataloging, and identification. See Section Roman numeral 6A and Appendices B and C. Characterize surface artifact scatters deposits through a preliminary analysis that includes material, method of manufacture, decorative elaboration, identifying marks and type and age if possible. Place the artifact catalog in the appendix, close quote. And I assume that's a quote from standards at DHR. And the question is, were any artifacts recovered during the survey of the proposed routes? If so, where did they end up? Were any recovered artifacts returned to the landowners of the property where they were found?
Yes, definitely artifacts were recovered, and they were processed in accordance with those rules. All of that information was submitted to the Division of Historical Resources. My understanding is at this point, and I'm not positive, but I think that those artifacts are turned over to the Division of Historical Resources, but I'm not sure. I think it's possible that landowners may be able to get those, but at the moment I believe that those are with the Division of Historical Resources or will be.
Well, and normally the curation standards for all archaeological material are determined in that programmatic agreement that we were just talking about.
Okay. And the last question on historic resources on this page is Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act requires federal agencies and their agents to take into account the impacts of their undertakings on properties eligible for or listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Does this mean that Northern Pass does not need to take into account the impact of their undertaking on properties not eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places, which comprise the vast majority of archaeological resources in the state?
You repeat that again.
I'm going to have you read the question.
I know the Section 106 part of it, but I want to see that.
Why don't you read the question? Because you're probably much more familiar with the written standards than I am. It's a bottom question.
Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act requires federal agencies who are giving money, permitting, or licensing, in this case for a presidential permit, to take into consideration historic properties that are likely to be affected by the project and are on or eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. So if there is a property within that area of potential effect that is determined not eligible for the National Register, then it does not need to be considered under Section 106.
Okay, and then there was another question. Here we go. National Grid and Public Service Company of New Hampshire, doing business as Eversource Energy, filed a joint application for a certificate of site and facility with the Site Evaluation Committee. The application seeks the issuance of a certificate of site and facility, approving the siting, construction, and operation of a 345 kilovolt CH electric transmission line. The proposed transmission line will be constructed in an existing developed transmission line corridor between New England Power's Tewksbury 22A substation in Tewksbury, Massachusetts, and PSNH's Scobie Pond 345 kV substation in Londonderry, New Hampshire. Since Northern Pass has been extended to Londonderry and would presumably connect with this project, why is this project not considered part of Northern Pass? Incidentally, that project is the subject of a pending application before the Site Evaluation Committee, commonly referred to as the Merrimack Valley Reliability Project. But you can answer the question as to why it's not considered part of Northern Pass.
So that project, Merrimack Valley Reliability Project, has been determined by the independent system operator to be needed for system reliability, hence a reliability project. It's completely independent of Northern Pass. That's why it's the subject of a separate application. Jim, you want to add?
No, just it is entirely separate. It's a need date to maintain the New England grid's reliability is, I believe it's 2017 or so. So we're saying basically with all the changes in generation and the evolution of the system, if we don't have that project in by the end of 2017 or 2018, I'm not exactly, 18 is the need date, we would expect to have reliability problems on the grid. And that's regardless of Northern Pass coming in or not.
Okay. Next question is, what is the scenic impact in Franconia Notch if the line is buried?
I'll turn this over to our visual simulation expert, but one of the things we were intending to do by committing to underground construction in the region is to eliminate additional visual impacts in that region. Terry, you want to add?
I'll try and add. My name is Terry DeWan. We did the visual impact assessment. We specifically did not do a visual impact assessment of the option that you're proposing. So would only be speculating at this point, not knowing what it would look like, where it would be locating, what other facilities would have to be done to accommodate an underground transmission line in that area.
Next question is, changes in the route so far have shifted it from the towers east of the PEMI in Holderness to underground through downtown Plymouth. Is it possible that at some point the route might shift again to involve further burial in Bridgewater? If so, is it possible that it might stay on the west side of the PEMI? We are landowners along the PEMI and are concerned.
So the plan that we have now formally proposed to the Site Evaluation Committee is our current plan. We're not anticipating additional underground construction at this point.
Okay.